How can the people in this room reduce the costs to action? How can the people in this room, how can the people around the world, how can anybody who's seen what's happened in the last year, what thoughts do you have about how we can make sure we get the truth of what our governments are doing, that we have a seat at the table of government, regardless of how authoritarian our government, regardless of what their response would be, because when they do something wrong, we will know about it. And they won't know who told the world about it. And critically, this is the thing. This is not about anarchy. This is not about, you know, wiping out government. This is about saying when governments realize that when they do unlawful things, when they do unconstitutional things, or when they do things that are entirely legal but comprehensively immoral, we will find out about it. That will change the world. That will change the way we live. Because the problem today is when you bring, you know, a case when the system we have today is secret agencies operating under secret policies, secret interpretations of laws, overseen by secret courts, rubber stamp courts, who in 35 years have said no only 13 times out of 35,000. When that's the way it goes, and you know, they're overseen by these congressmen who are getting their pockets stuffed full of dollars by these intelligence contracting companies, what the government has done, when we look at this, any one of those steps in isolation, the fact that it takes 10 years to get this heard in an open court, at the Supreme Court instead of a secret court, when we look at what that is in isolation, any step, it might look like, you know, clever lawyering by the government. But when we look at it comprehensively, what it is the government has developed an exploit chain that provides basically the root password to our Constitution. They've escaped the sandbox of our democracy, and they're basically using it to change our Bill of Rights without us seeing it. And when we go, what does the Bill of Rights say? The root kid is telling us, oh, well, the Fourth Amendment's still there. But in reality, it's gone. Something completely different is happening behind the scenes. And we can't allow that. And the only way we can stop that from being sort of a retrospective action where we go back and investigate and try to figure out who did something wrong, who we should hold to account, is we have to make sure we stop it before it happens. And the only way that's going to happen is if we have transparency and we have accountability for the senior officials who fucked up in the first place. Thank you.
Okay. Well, very good. I first of all, let me say I agree. I understand what you're saying. Don't condemn these people, or you know that isn't the important thing. But you and I aren't talking. We're having a real discussion here because we do have a somewhat different focus, and I happen to think that both approaches are important. Let me distinguish. Actually, when I keep mentioning this 40 years between 1973 when my trial ended and 2013 when you came out, that was 40 years, or 71, 2010, and so forth, I in fact came to feel that I was apparently just asking too much. That somehow you keep saying, you know, everybody has a limit. And what I was seeing was, no, a few people have a limit. And most of them have no, by the way, as you said, there's no question, at all times, there are people in the system who are criticizing, who are raising questions, who are even, you know, saying this is wrong or whatnot, up to a point, as you did before, you know, you went all the way and talked to other people. But their limit is going outside channels, going to the public, that limit doesn't get crossed. They're taking a risk even complaining or criticizing, some of them. And they may even lose their jobs as a result eventually, but they get another job as long as they haven't broken that promise to keep their mouth shut about anything. See, they can get another job then. They can be trusted. They will stay inside the system like George Will. Anyway, during the Vietnam War. But they don't. I come to feel apparently nobody can do this. I don't know. It's so necessary and it's so obvious. The price of not doing it, the price of the government achieving total control of the embarrassing things and the plans they're making, so is Vietnam War and the Iraq War. The approach to climate we've had right along, the nuclear weapons policies, which are incredibly reckless, insanely reckless, that have gone on without exposure from people on the inside, they don't have a limit. So as I was saying, you and Manning did show me there are some people out there. I've always felt that there were more who had the capability to cross that line than we were seeing, and that, you know, the advantage. And your approach is to make it less dangerous, less risky, and I agree that's essential, and can be done. And the people in this very room are contributing to that and can contribute to it. As we were speaking last time, you and me, I have, being not a technologist, less optimism about technology than you have. You know infinitely more about it than I do, but I'm more than twice the age you are, and the future of Titanics, let's say, is in my mind, even though that was before me. But the Challenger, for example, and it's hard for me to believe that all these people together will make the process of telling embarrassing things about the government, which is exactly what the public needs to know, to hold them accountable, to have an influence on policy, that can be made totally riskless. I think that there will remain a risk of some kind. And
I think that's fair to say. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to...
You probably agree with that.
Yeah. There's never going to be a fully risk-free thing. But what we can do is we can mitigate risks.
We can
try to make it a little bit more available, a little bit less painful.
Okay.
What you're saying is
crucial. It's crucial that they do that, and what you're saying is crucial. But I just want to put in a word for what I've been saying here, which is to hope that people like you and the others who have been speaking out here, like Tom Drake and Jesselyn Radek and the other who have spoken the truths, that people can be inspired of it, that they will be more whistleblowing than there has been, even given risk. And, you know, I was handed in here, as we were coming in, a thing from Ex Post Fact, which is a poster that is appearing in Washington right now. And it has with my picture on it, actually. And it has a big headline saying, "Don't do what I did." Because for years, didn't want to talk about people. I talked about civil disobedience and the need to do it, and in connection with nuclear things. In other words, I've gotten arrested more than 80 times and so forth. And I wanted, people generally did not have access to classified information. So I wasn't talking to people who had that access generally. They won't let me talk to them and anyway, get an audience there. And so I didn't want to say you should be whistleblowers, because that sounded too much like saying do what I did, and that seemed self-promoting, and I didn't want to do it. And then I thought of what they were quoting on that poster, a new way to put it. Don't do what I did. Don't wait till the war has started. Don't wait till thousands more have died before you tell the truth with documents. And it doesn't say it on the sign, but it said, even at personal cost, even at your personal risk, that people should see, yes, you're not in prison, but you are in exile. And probably, I have to say, I say very sadly, I think indefinitely. I do not see this Congress and any future president or this one changing the law as they should, rescinding paragraph E of 18 U.S.C. 793, which should be rescinded as unconstitutional. I don't think that's going to happen. And that means you couldn't come back and have a fair trial ever that I really foresee in this country. In other countries, they may change their laws. That's in process of allowing a public interest defense and allowing an argument. But I would love to see that in this country, but I don't see it happening. So that means you have exile. Well, for many people, that could be a negative thing. Well, look, he did it, and look what you're telling us to do. He can't come back to his own country. But the fact is, you showed, first of all, you're not in prison. If you came back here, as you know, and I know, you would not be able to talk to the public to make your case to the public the way Kerry and Hillary Clinton have urged you to do. Hillary actually said, make your case to the public, which actually affects the legal. Bullshit. You would be in an isolation cell like Chelsea Manning, not for 10 and a half months, but for the rest of your life, I believe, from the moment you were arrested. So you could not make your case the way you can and are doing for the whole world right now. So it's essential. I said this right at the end. It was essential for you to be out of the country when you made your revelations. That was another difference. People said, well, Dan Ellsberg stayed and faced it and so forth. Another whole thing altogether. But I was able to speak to demonstrations, the interviews, everything, as you're doing now from outside the country, inside the country, even while the FBI was looking for me. I was on Walter Cronkite in the evening, evening news at an undisclosed location in Cambridge, which got him very excited. Wow, I've never done anything like this. And there I am. The FBI is looking for me all over the world, and I'm on evening news. Well, you are too, but you had to be out of the country, and it was essential that the people hear from you. So what I'm saying is people can look at it and say, here is a guy who understood that it was worth taking a risk. Worth risking and even sacrificing personal relationships. I'm so glad your father was able to go to Russia and see you, but you know, if you were in an isolation cell, lots of luck, you know. So Chelsea Manning has never been interviewed by a reporter from the time she was arrested in Kuwait in 2002. No reporter has been able to see her face to face and talk to her. So you would have the same prospect. And it's worth it. You did the right thing. I don't even have to ask you whether you regret paying this price. I can't even imagine. You know, the thought wouldn't occur to you. I never met a person who went to prison against the draft, against the war, and I know a lot of them, who inspired me to give the Pentagon Papers. I don't know one who ever told me they regretted the 2-3 years in prison that they spent. So that's an example that has to be seen, and yes, lower the risks, but also get the message out, it's worth taking the risk. A war's worth of lives may be at stake, and our democracy, in your case, is at stake. Thank you.
Thank you. There are a couple things I could say on that, just real quickly, because I think we're running down on time. But
we got an extra 20 minutes, so keep talking. We can go till 5 of.
Okay. There's a lot there. One of the things was you touched on patriotism a little bit earlier. And I think everybody in this room would agree, you know, most of the time people who attend hacker conferences have already learned this lesson in life. But being a patriot doesn't mean, you know, obedience to authority. Putting aside your obligations to your people, to your country, for the benefit of your government is the opposite of patriotism. Oaths to authority are one of the most dangerous and corrosive things that a person can agree to in any society, in any culture around the world. What we require, what we should encourage, are oaths to values, right? Like our Constitution. If they didn't want us to stand up for our Constitution and say, you guys, this is the most ridiculous shit I've ever seen. You know, you're spying on everybody in the country and everybody in the world, and you're not even bothering to get a court order for it, a real court order instead of your secret court order. You're not doing anybody any favors. You know, and if they expect us to do that, if they expect us to stay silent in the face of extraordinary, massive, widespread violations of the Constitution, they shouldn't ask us to take the oath in the first place. You know, because they're not serious about it. There was something else you mentioned there, but I'm sorry. I actually have a really short working memory, so I've completely lost it. I wasn't taking notes.
That's my problem. You're too young. Right. You're too young. To this.
A lifetime of memes and, you know, lolcats, things like that, they'll do that to you. What can I say, guys? Child of the internet. But really, it's how do we come together? How do we fix the problem, right? We know what we have, but the key is you talked about the way things are. You talked about the system we have today. You talked about the proclivities of people to sort of protect their own interests to the detriment of the people around them, to the detriment of their own families, to the detriment of themselves for the sake of comfort. Because comfort is a tremendous, you know, motivating and human force. When we talk about funny cat pictures, you know, on the internet, it sounds stupid, but we love these things. You know, they mean a lot to us. But the key is, when we talk about the government, sort of, you know, again, attacking the hypervisor of our democracy, getting out there, and, you know, it's changing the domain, the boundaries of our rights, without telling us about it. If they can do it to the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment, they can do it to anything. Right? You may say, I don't care about politics. I don't care about you spying on my neighbor. I care about you spying on me. It's going to happen. Right? When you cede, not just the privileges, but the rights that are inherent to you, and you sort of make a bargain and say, okay, these aren't rights that are inherent to my nature. These aren't rights that belong to the human condition, but these are rights that are given to me by the government. And they can be sort of peeled back at any time. You're never going to get those back. It's going to get worse. The Founding Fathers said, people get the government they deserve. You know, and if people aren't willing to stand up, if people aren't willing to take risks to reveal wrongdoing, even if it means they have to burn their own life down to do it, their families are going to have to live in that society. You know, their children and their descendants and everybody after us. The values that they hold dear will disappear from the world we live in. And we all have an ability to push back against that. We all have the ability to contribute. You know, and the open source movement is a great example of this. But it's not limited to programming. It's, you know, politics. It's the way we live. It's the way we talk to our friends. It's the way we talk to our enemies. We have the ability to build a better, more equal, more fair, and more just society for everybody. And the advance of technology is a very dangerous and destabilizing thing when we don't think about the way this is moving forward. When we think about the increase in robotization of the workforce, the fact that we have young people who have tremendous student debt that they're never going to be able to get rid of, that's not dischargeable through bankruptcy proceedings. Thanks, government, for that one. We have a new class that are indentured servants in a very new and modern way that's very corrosive to the sort of egalitarian ideals that we as Americans aspire to uphold. And if we don't take chances, if we don't take risks to push back and say, look, we have a place in this society, we have a place in this world, and if you guys in government are not going to represent the public's interests, if you're going to represent your own interests, if you're going to represent elite interests, if you're going to represent class interests, exclusively to the detriment of the electorate that puts you in that seat, we are going to rebuild a new society around you. And thanks to the same technology that screwed us in many ways, we are now empowered in new ways. You know, when we talk about all of these things, when we talk about mass surveillance, when we talk about the fact that, you know, we've got these famous inquisitors in history that said, give me six lines written by the hand of the most honest man and I'll find something in them to hang him with. You know, we're not talking about inquisitions from medieval times. We're talking about Keith Alexander. You know, and it's up to us to change that because we can revoke that permission from them. We can try democratically, but if they say no, if they say we're going to exclude you from that debate, if we're going to exclude you from those discussions, if we're going to play games like they're doing in the UK where they passed an extraordinary expansion of surveillance powers just last week under the guise of an emergency law when they've been ignoring the emergency for the last year, we have not just the capability, but we have an obligation to push back against that and to create the society we want to live in.
So we only have about
questions.
So we only have about 2 minutes left. Do each of you want to take a minute to address okay. each other or address the audience?
I'll address you. We really do agree fundamentally here because you talk about risks, and you talk about bypassing the people who don't take risks in the government, building a new technology. I just want to say that, too, will take risk. In other words, people, as we know from Aaron Schwartz, as we know from the others who have gone down here, basically, Jeremy Hammond and the others, and Tom Drake, who tried to do this, and William Binney, Kurt Wiebe, and so forth, who tried within channels to do all this. There is risk, even if you don't get prosecuted. And if you don't, so people will have to be willing in all the services. Even here, it will take risk possibility. And remember, Tom Drake yesterday, and Justin, we talk a lot, and you and I talk a lot about the Constitution and rights. But, you know, that's not in the end. That's not the beginning and end of the problem here. After all, the Constitution authorized slavery for a long time. The Fugitive Slave Act was upheld by the Supreme Court. And the people who violated that at great risk were doing the right thing. When Rosa Parks refused to get up from her seat, she was violating in Montgomery, Alabama. She was violating a law that had been upheld by the Alabama Supreme Court, if that's not an oxymoron of some kind. But the fact was, it was civil disobedience and it was necessary. If they change the law, or I should say, if the Supreme Court upholds for the first time, it's never addressed this question, the Espionage Act, with its strict liability, with its no public interest, no, you know, not without any of the changes that are necessary in it. If they uphold that and say it's constitutional, we will have lost pretty much of our First Amendment, and without the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment and other things, and that will have to be violated at that point. There'll have to be civil disobedience at that point, and the Supreme Court will have said, five of them, maybe more, maybe six, will have said it's constitutional to allow for government solely by handout. And a lot of journalists will live with that. Michael Kinsley and David Gregory will take their handouts with no problem and allow the government to have the last word as to whether something should be redacted or not. There'll still be newspapers, as in China. But the fact is, we will have lost the independent branches. We don't have much in Congress now or in the courts, but something. We'll have lost the ability to rebuild that. And the effect will be, as I say, more unnecessary wrongful wars and so more climate depredation and so forth. So we need more people like you, as I keep saying, manning others, but also people who are less courageous, if I may say, but who are willing to take some risk and to discover that there are limits to what they will put up with. That's in this audience and in the government. And they will quickly find, if they ask that question, that there are limits, and I should be willing to take a risk. They'll discover what I discovered in 1969. The government has gone beyond those limits for me, and they have to be exposed.
And with that, I think we'll leave it there.
It won't be hard to find the limit if you start asking yourself whether there is a limit and whether you should go across it.
Ed, do you have any closing thoughts?
Ed.
Just real quickly, look around everybody who's in this room, right? And recognize that we've got a broad cross-section of people who are thinking about these issues, working on these issues, and affected by these issues. There are people from the NSA in this room right now. You know, they pay for travel costs to go to conferences and everything like that. And then the people who go, they write up little reports and they share it with everybody else. They go to different tracks so they make sure they see all the fun talks. But the key is, even for you guys who work for the NSA, who are in the room, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you what to believe in, you know. And it's okay if you hate me. It's okay if you disagree with me. It's okay for everybody, you know, to look at this, because we have to decide how we feel, right? We got to stop thinking that what's on the news is the gospel truth. What an official says behind the podium is exactly the right answer. What I say is something that should be relied on. I could be totally full of shit. You've got to figure out what you believe in and stand for it. You have to stand for it, you know. And whether I'm a good guy, whether I'm a bad guy, whether I'm a hero, whether I'm a traitor, none of that matters. Criticize me, hate me, but think about what matters in the issues, right? Think about the world you want to live in, and then be a part of building that. If I could ask you to do one thing, that would be it. Thank you to everybody here. And thank you, Van Elsberg, for everything you've done.
Thank you. Amen.
Thank you. I can hear the whistles really well. I can hear that even better. Thank you all. Thank you.